Autumn would love to introduce you to Scale IP, the world's fastest growing IP commercialization software. Are you ready to transform your tech transfer office into a marketing powerhouse? Using proprietary IP transaction data, Scale IP helps you easily find high intent companies that partner or license with universities, gain technical fit insights, and launch personalized email campaigns with the right IP decision makers to save time, money, and effort. Don't let your innovations get lost in the shuffle. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free offer when you sign up with promo code AutumnLove1 at www.scaleip.com. That's Autumn, love, the number one, at www.scaleip.com.
You're listening to Autumn on the Air, the weekly podcast that brings you conversations about the impact of research commercialization and the people who make it happen. Join us for interviews with patent and licensing professionals, innovators, entrepreneurs, and tech transfer leaders on the issues and trends that matter most. Keep listening for an inside track on the people, IP policies, and politics changing our world.
For decades, rural areas have faced the decline, losing economic opportunities and witnessing a brain drain as creatives and young people move to urban centers. But what if university tech transfer offices could hold the key to revitalizing these areas? Today, we're joined by Richard Cahoon. Dick is an adjunct professor in global development with over 30 years of experience in invention, intellectual property technology commercialization, and entrepreneurship. He has worked extensively with universities, government agencies, and companies across more than 25 countries, advising on R&D partnerships, IP management, and venture creation. A former director of Cornell's Tech Transfer Office, Dick has also served as an expert in IP litigation and technology valuations. He teaches and advises globally on innovation and has helped launch multiple startups. He is also an inventor and holds several U.S. patents. Dick, so excited to have you on the podcast today.
Lisa, I'm really happy as well.
Well, we have a lot to talk about today, Dick, and I thought maybe the best place to start would be for me to set the stage a little bit. You know, rural America has faced economic decline for decades, and traditionally, university tech transfer offices have focused more on urban or research-intensive areas. So tell us a little bit about what drove your idea of aligning TTOs with cooperative extension to tap into rural communities, and how did you identify this as a viable solution for economic revitalization?
Sure. Well, like a lot of our ideas, they kind of come to us when we connect a bunch of dots, you know, that can happen over a long period of time. Or for me, it was something that gradually happened. And first of all, I would say that the context for me is that when I joined Cornell's Tech Transfer Office in 1990, I brought with me experience as an entrepreneur, as an inventor and entrepreneur. So I just naturally brought a lot of kind of entrepreneurial spirit. So we started engaging in a lot more proactive development of entrepreneurship. And we weren't just passive regulators of entrepreneurs on campus, so although we did that as well. But I was very involved in actually creating opportunities where I would then go out and recruit entrepreneurs. And we have several successes where I would say I sort of was the shadow CEO for a while. I created something called the Venture Vision Summary, which was kind of like a tech brief, only it was, you know, designed to recruit entrepreneurs. So I was starting out with this idea that we could play a very proactive role, we meaning tech transfer offices. And so with that as background, my technical love is agriculture and kind of more rural kinds of technologies, actually. And so at Cornell, we had technologies that seemed to me to be more suitable for agriculture, farming, rural areas, et cetera. So with all that kind of swimming around in my mind, and then, of course, driving around in rural America, any of us who do that, it's got to break your heart at times. You drive through these once thriving little communities and they're just hollowed out and, you know, main streets all closed up. And that just would break my heart. And I'd go, gosh, what could we do? And then I started to think, you know, well, there was a day when they were thriving. Why were they thriving? Because there was economic activity there. So that all kind of came together for me. And I said, why don't we take more proactive stance and a more creative and proactive role in trying to see if we can't create entrepreneurial activity in smaller towns, rural towns. And so I ended up identifying a community, and I can't remember all the reasons why I picked on this one, but it's called Auburn, New York. It's about an hour drive from Ithaca, and it's had its heyday. There were a lot of inventors and inventions that came out of Auburn way back in the day. And then it just kind of fell on hard times, like a lot of places. And I ended up finding a receptive ear in the mayor. And somebody made an introduction for me. And so I met with the mayor in his office and I told him about this idea. And he was a very innovative thinker. And so that launched an effort to try to think about how we might create more entrepreneurial activities based on Cornell technology, maybe entrepreneurs from his city, maybe entrepreneurs from Cornell or wherever. And that kind of launched the first little pilot.
So tell us a little bit more about that pilot program. Were there specific goals that you had going into this cooperative extension? And was there a particular defining moment that really spoke to you and said, hey, wait, this really has some potential here for supporting rural innovation?
So the involvement of extension came a little bit later. I was moving forward with my collaboration with the mayor of Auburn and this idea that we had two or three technologies that I thought could take root in that small community, particularly if there was some support of one form or another from the community itself. And so we were moving forward with that. And somewhere along the line, I started to think, well, you know, we have cooperative extension and we have had for 150 years or something like that. And in New York, we have roughly one extension office in every county. And so I started thinking, well, maybe they could play a role. That seemed to me to be a natural thing. So I decided that I would reach out to the head of cooperative extension at the time. And being director, I could get an audience rather easily. So the director at the time was a woman, and I don't remember her name now, but I got in touch with her, and she said, I'd be delighted to talk to you about this idea. She says, this idea is something we've never even heard of. The tech transfer office has never called us. And we kind of know what you do, but we don't think it's relevant to cooperative extension. And so I said, well, let's sit down and chat. And I told her about this idea. And she said, you know, this is really interesting and unique. And I'll tell you what, we have a biannual meeting of all the cooperative extension agents from the state. And they all meet on campus for a couple of days. And would you like to give a presentation? And I said, sure, I'd love to do that. And she said, let me just warn you that you're going to get a lot of blank stares. And I said, okay, thanks for the heads up. And she said, but I'm also very confident that you're going to get a few people are going to step up and go, sign me up. This is fantastic. So of the, say, roughly 50 attendees of the meeting, and I gave this presentation about tech transfer, what we do, and IP, and licensing, and entrepreneurship. And I said, I think there's a way for us to collaborate, and here are my thoughts. And I mentioned about the Auburn ideas, and She was right that most people just tuned it out and were like, oh, they wanted to move on to something that was relevant to them. But about five people came up to me afterwards, five agents, and said, this is really good. How can we get involved? And so that kind of started the process of saying, okay, you know, what could they do? How could we work together? And I should also say that we had in parallel to all this was a rather robust development of what's called entrepreneurship at Cornell. And that is this, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will know that at their universities, they've had a flourishing of entrepreneurial programs for students and faculty and staff and so on. So this was kind of a natural, and you could say, suggest things like, hey, people in your community could take entrepreneurial classes, that sort of thing.
So really interesting. So that one of the things, you know, with teaming up with this cooperative extension, it helps deal with the brain drain that many of these rural regions have dealt with for so long, where they've lost all their young talent to cities. And that's been a big challenge for them. How do you think tech transfer professionals can help foster local talent retention through similar type models?
Yeah, I think, and you mentioned, so as I say, you start connecting dots and you realize, oh, there's a dot over here that gets connected as well. And there was an effort, some people will remember this author, and I can't remember his name now, but it was all about the creative economy and about how if you start thinking about the creative economy with creative people and their ability to generate inventions and creations that are, and business models and so on that end up as the engine of economic development. There was an effort in Syracuse to some degree where there was a focused effort to see, can't we help stimulate the creative economy? And that got me thinking that that's really what we are in the middle of as tech transfer professionals, is that we're kind of the, you know, we're the bridge, we're the conduit, you know, we're creatives, inventors, and even folks that are, you know, in other areas outside of science and engineering are creating things. And we can then provide this bridge to enable the creative economy to flourish. And so I think it's just a natural. And the more you get involved in it, the more you think about it. And I've been doing this now since I left the tech transfer office at Cornell in other countries, where you really can play, I think, a rather impactful role as a tech transfer professional, individual, and as an office in stimulating this creative economy.
Now, given that you have this pilot program going on, have you seen any technologies or innovations that have come out of it that you think show some promise for rural revitalization?
Yeah, you know, so the kind of the sad part of this story is that I left the tech transfer office in 2009, just as this was beginning. People were starting to notice this a little bit. Like I said, we got a few things going with a few cooperative extension agents, et cetera. But then I left in 2009. And this was probably one of my biggest regrets. I mean, it's not easy to leave a thriving tech transfer office. It was time for me. I'd been there 20 years. And so it was time for me to do other things, which I don't regret at all. I had a fantastic time since. But this was one that I kind of left in its embryonic form. And so the only thing I can, and there are probably several, I know we ended up with several, gosh, quite a few startups here in Ithaca, which I don't think really exemplifies what I'm talking about. But the one I was thinking of, because I suspected you might ask me about this, there was a startup that I feel like I was the midwife for back in the early 90s. It came out of our Geneva campus. Cornell has a Ag Experiment Station in Geneva, New York, and it had to do with biological control of agricultural pest and disease. And I would like to think, a very subtle hand at trying to make sure that it would take root in upstate New York. And so I, you know, there were people who said to me, oh, well, we ought to require that startups stay in New York. And I go, well, we can't do that. That's the wrong approach. And yet there are things that maybe we could do to help sweeten the opportunity. And so we did that in various ways. We, you know, made phone calls to landlords who would maybe rent at preferred prices to startups, that sort of thing. And we ended up with a startup called BioWorks, which started in Geneva. And I became very good friends with the CEO. And to this day now, it's taken root in a little town called Victor, upstate New York. So that was a good example where there was a fair amount of proactive work on the part of the TTO. It employs, I don't know, 70 to 100 people, something like that.
I'd say that's a success story for sure.
And I would say this, that it was never a systematic approach. I was beginning that effort. It was kind of a little bit of a rifle. Let's try Auburn. With Auburn, we had a lot of things starting. But then the mayor got, he lost an election. So, he was a real thinker. He was a real innovator. And this is one of the things that I've thought, just like when you go to the cooperative extension folks and you say, hey, let's collaborate on this idea. Most people initially are going to go, huh, what? I don't see it. But a few pioneers will see it. Same thing with what I would say, let's call them the community. I think if we went to, let's say, county supervisors, I found out they have a meeting every year of 3,000 counties in the country, and they have a some sort of an association. And I thought, well, let's go talk to them and say, hey, let's create something together. I think you're going to get the same thing, which is most people be like, huh, what? No. But there would be these few who would go, yeah, sure. What could we do? Well, you can welcome entrepreneurs. I thought, for example, if we could find communities that would be welcoming, you know, where the community says, sure, we've got a little mini incubator and we can give you some support in one way or another if you'll come here and run your company, your startup out of here.
Yeah, I would think a lot of these rural communities would have space that they could use to convert into incubators, accelerators, things like that.
Exactly right. And I had other elements of this envisioned program, you know, which included make friends with a local banker, one or two bankers who are going to be friendly and helpful. And I should just say, one of the things that we did, this was another data point. When I started at Cornell, there was I don't think there was really anything in terms of support for entrepreneurs. And I started talking and helping people think about this. And one of the connections I made was with the owner of a car dealership. He's passed now, but he loved Ithaca. And he had fairly deep pockets after a successful career of owning these several dealerships. And he said, Dick, what can I do? And I said, we need a venture fund. And so he went out to his friends and said, hey, let's all of us put in $25,000 to create a venture fund. It became something called Cayuga Venture Fund. And it became the investor to a number of startups. So I thought, that would be another thing we could do, go to these communities and go to folks that love their community, have some deep pockets and are willing to put in some patient money into a fund, you know?
So that's really interesting, Dick. And I'm curious, what challenges do you think tech transfer offices will face when trying to extend their model to a rural context? And how would you think that they could try and tackle some of those challenges?
So, yes. Well, some of the challenges we've kind of alluded to by saying that most people are going to hear this and go, I don't know, it's not a good fit, you know, whatever, you know, because I know that most of our listeners, me included, we think, hey, you know, you're thinking about your immediate vicinity of, you know, surrounding the university, and you're thinking about, you know, investors. Gosh, when I first started at Cornell, investors didn't even want to come to Ithaca. It was too far away. So there's that challenge. I think that the challenge also of tech transfer offices and professionals are spread thin. You know, the idea of adding another mission sounds daunting and almost impossible. How are we going to do it? Yet one more thing, because we never have enough time anyway. But I think it's an idea. There's one of the reasons I'm doing this is that I think it's an idea that's so big and so powerful and has so much potential that I think those of us who are willing, the pioneers, willing to keep it alive as it moves forward, we're willing to tackle some of these challenges. I think we need, I think you just got to spread the message, and we got to try some little experiments. You know, again, what we've said earlier is, if you go to an audience, pick an audience that you think should be interested, many of them won't be. A few will be. Let's focus on those. Let's see what we can do. There will be many technologies that aren't really suitable for this approach, but there will be others that I always thought that the land grant universities in particular, again, because of the land grant mission, the cooperative extension mission, lent itself to a natural. You've got this network already set up. So I think I would, if I were one of our listeners in a university, particularly if you have cooperative extension, I'd start talking to your cooperative extension leadership. And also your, you know, if you're a director, I would be talking to your, you know, your boss, your leadership, your vice provost, your vice president for research, that sort of thing, to get buy-in at the top level.
Yeah, and those cooperative extension programs, they have a long-standing reputation of working closely with the rural communities. And how important do you think it is having those cooperative extension programs, because they've established trust and been a network for these rural regions for some time? So it sounds like they would be a real key to the program that you're proposing.
I think so. The more I thought about it and the more I engaged with the cooperative extension folks, the more I thought the role they would play with, for example, almost always the cooperative extension offices have meeting rooms. Right. So you've got a natural place to meet. You've got a natural channel. I mean, the system was set up to channel information from campus to users out in the community. And of course, it started out as, you know, for farmers, you know, how to grow something better. Then it's morphed into all kinds of things now that it's a very much a community-wide support system. So what I've learned about the cooperative extension system is that those folks are, you know, now they have decades and decades of experience in making connections with community, knowing who should be invited, who should be involved, how to reach out, how to promote, how to set the stage for training and teaching events and making those connections between, you know, our labs on campus with the communities. So I felt like it was I know sometimes I'm so optimistic, but I kind of thought that if we could just teach the extension agents what we do, you know, so if I told them about patents, most of these people are like, I don't even know what you're talking about. What is a patent? And I don't like the sound of that anyway, you know, charging money for, you know, they have to go through a process of learning about it, getting comfortable with it. But once they do, I think it's a natural for their system to work with us.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask you, I know you've had tremendous global experience working in a number of different innovation ecosystems. Do you see any parallels between rural America's current situation, some of the other countries and regions you've worked in, particularly when it comes to fostering local innovation?
Well, that's a good question. Yes. I would say most of the countries that I've been involved in are developing countries. Since leaving, I have a faculty appointment at Cornell, but since leaving the tech transfer office, I have worked primarily in developing countries. That means the rural community, and agriculture is almost always a major sector. And so there's a lot of that going on, and we're always focused on taking technologies to the rural economy. So it's a little different, and yet at the same time, it's also, I mean, in those cases, there's a lot more opportunity to take technologies to the rural areas. That said, I also realize I don't know how much people appreciate how fortunate we are in the United States to have a system. No matter what you want to say about how difficult it is and how it's broken down in the rural area, we still have a system that's filled with innovators and creators and people who are optimists. And we really don't have as much bureaucracy as sometimes people complain about. You got to go to other countries where you see sometimes the bureaucracy is so stifling that you go, oh, wow. And everybody, they can't even get out of their own way in terms of doing something that's a little different, a little out of the normal constraints, you know?
Yeah, I would imagine so. And so that leads me to ask, you know, scaling rural-focused tech transfer programs across multiple regions is a challenge. So what are some of the key steps for growing this particular model, both maybe at Cornell and maybe at other universities with similar community outreach programs?
Well, also a good question. I guess if I were to take the lead in something like this and say, okay, let's do this in a more comprehensive way, I would start with the land-grant universities. Not that they're the be-all and end-all at all, but they do have that built-in infrastructure system. And I'm optimistic that you will find people within leadership and as well as in the offices that will be convinced that this is a good thing, and we could start directing some resources in that direction. But I would get everybody together. This would be interesting to get a room full of tech transfer office directors and cooperative extension directors. Get them in the same room, and present to them some of these ideas and get them talking. And also listen. I see the world primarily as a tech transfer professional, not as an extension person. There may be things about the model that I'm not aware of, and others aren't aware of. But I think that would be a good place to start. This was one of my thoughts: is that we might start by getting together some tech transfer professionals at Autumn together, hence our conversation today, who think that there could be some future here. And let's start small. I'm always a believer that I love having big dreams, but being a practical, let's try to see if something works. Let's try small. And let's get half a dozen of us trying this out,
I think it's a great idea. And with the 50th anniversary meeting coming up in March in Washington, D.C., I know you're going to be there, hint to all our listeners, I think it would be a great opportunity to see if you could get some willing participants who'd be willing to test this out in a variety of different areas.
You know, it reminds me, I think, you know, if we step back and you think about, you know, movements that really ultimately had impact, that they almost always start with a small group. And I tell the story oftentimes about the founding of Autumn, which I think was called SUPA at the time.
Yep.
Yeah, Society for the University or for University Patent Administrators. As I understand it, it was less than 10 people or so. And that idea took root, and look where it has taken us and the profession. And so I think similarly, with an idea that's compelling and just makes so much sense and has so much potential positive outcome, I think that getting a few of us together probably is a pretty good way to kind of start some critical mass, maybe.
Absolutely. And, you know, you never know what the economic impact could be. You know, a couple of these programs take off. They do really, really well. It could really be something that could help a lot of communities throughout the country.
Yeah. I have a very quick little anecdote I'll tell you that I was talking to a very good friend of mine. He's a MIT PhD, ran the X-ray part of our synchrotron, but he's become a good friend of mine. And he grew up in a little town called Ellenville, New York. And he was telling me recently that he got back from his 50th high school reunion, and he was talking to a lot of his old high school mates, and they were all reflecting on the fact that Ellenville was a thriving community back in the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and then it went into a spiral of decline. And now it's, you know, it's kind of like we were talking about, one of those kind of rural little towns that's lost a lot of its vitality. Well, he told me the story was that the town was filled with vitality because of two inventors came to create a company there called Channel Master. And Channel Master had a patent invention involving folding TV antennas to go up on your roof. And the patent had to do with the hinge that you didn't have to assemble it. So it made it really easy for people to just buy the antenna and flip, it was up on the roof. And it, for a couple of decades, three decades or so, it was thriving, and it produced many, many, many good jobs and a thriving community because of an invention or two. And then, well, the rest is the story, where they just didn't keep up with innovation and so on. But to me, it was like, oh, there you go again. We can reproduce that foldable antenna with different technology because we got a lot of it.
Exactly. And then you bring in, you know, higher paying, well-paying jobs, you know, help revitalize the community, bring more people into the community. And there's so many places across the country right now that could really use that. And I'm thinking about our listeners here who want to talk with you when they get to Autumn, but let's say they want to kind of get a jump start. You know, Dick, what practical advice would you offer them on how to get started and even how to start gaining some traction within their own local communities?
Well, that's a really good question, Lisa. And I guess, again, if you're in a land grant, I would reach out to the Cooperative Extension the management, and just talk to them about, you know, what's their system like? Will they be receptive at all to this idea? I would look at my portfolio. If I'm a tech transfer, if I'm a manager of technology, I would look at my portfolio as I did and said, gosh, there's some of these technologies that I think belong in a rural community, and maybe even start thinking about how one might try to do some marketing with that in mind as a possibility. I also would think, now I'm, you know, I love government, but boy, working with government sometimes, I think that almost every, you'll find receptive ears in almost every state capital. If you said, hey, we're from the tech transfer office at XYZ University, and we would like to be helpful in the rural communities with tech transfer, I think they we'd probably find. I'd just do some talking. I'd reach out, just explore a little bit and see what kind of receptivity you get.
Right, kind of plant the seeds type of thing.
Plant some seeds, yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, Lisa, I didn't mention this earlier, but frankly, one of the, you know, in our business, you're always marketing your technologies. You're always looking for opportunities. And so for me, it was like yet one more avenue to find a home for our technologies. And so look in your portfolio for those that look like they might take root in some of these smaller towns.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. And Dick, you know, as the podcast comes to a close, I wanted to ask you, looking towards the future, how do you envision this like TTO cooperative extension collaboration evolving? Do you think that perhaps maybe this could become a standard model for tech transfer offices across the U.S.? And what impact do you think that it could potentially have?
Yeah, I do think that it has the potential to be one of the pillars of the mission of tech transfer. I mean, if you stop and you think about it, it's like, yeah, this just makes so much sense that I think that ultimately it will take root in some places more than others, I suspect, but also in ways that maybe we haven't even imagined right now. But I think that you're going to get gradual increase in understanding by the cooperative extension side. I think management, I think that leadership at universities will probably want to take a little more proactive role in this. I'd like to think that it will be a pleasure for tech transfer professionals to get involved in this, even though it initially sounds like it's going to be, you know, added work. But and I just think that we have a lot of tools now that we've, you know, we have SBIR, STTR, and I think this is going to, one of the things I say to folks who don't know tech transfer, I say we're kind of like a maestro. You know, we orchestrate and we, you know, here's the SBIR section. We want a little more of that. And, you know, you violins, I mean, you angel investors, you know. And I think as we, and I know I'm talking to some folks right now who probably are all ready to just step right into this maestro role where you can start to feel the, you know, the beautiful outcome of seeing some of these opportunities take root in rural communities and start to improve people's lives, because we see it over and over that, gosh, rural communities are just kind of crying out and they get desperate and
Yeah, there isn't a lot of hope in some of those regions for any type of economic revitalization. So this at least it's a promise. It's an opportunity.
And it's, you know, because they, you know, I see the desperation and the sadness and the, you know, and so then politically they get, you know, it's like, well, let's grasp at whatever, you know, somebody coming along and telling us, well, this is the thing to do, get mad at people and, you know, whatever. Instead, let's direct our energies in a way which is positive and has that potential to create these hubs and hives of activity. And I think tech transfer officers and offices can play that big role, catalytic role.
Absolutely. And Dick, it's been a real pleasure having you on the podcast today. And I'm really excited to see the potential that this collaboration between TTO offices and the cooperative extension holds for rural America. If our listeners want to reach out and talk to you even before the autumn annual meeting, where's the best place for them to reach you?
Why don't they just send me an email? My email address is, my initials are S as in Sam, it's not Sam, but RSC5 at cornell.edu. Send me an email, happy to chat. As Lisa says, I do plan on being in autumn DC And maybe we could even get together a group of us to have a cup of coffee and talk further about this.
I think that would be great. Thank you so much again, Dick, for all your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for giving me the soapbox to stand on.
For our listeners, if this conversation sparked ideas or questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Innovation and revitalization happen when we start talking and sharing ideas. Thanks again, Dick, for being here, and thank you all for tuning in today.
Thanks for listening to Autumn on the Air with Lisa Mueller. Get social with us and share your thoughts. You can tweet us at AUTM or visit us online at AUTM.net. We'll be back next week on the air. Be sure to join us.